Dixon and Nagley were the only women, and Nagley was the only NCO. The others were all officers. O'Donnell and Lowry were captains, and the rest were all majors, which was totally screwed up in terms of a coherent chain of command, but Reacher didn't care. He knew that nine people working closely would operate laterally rather than vertically, which in the event was exactly what happened. The unit had organized itself like a small market baseball team enjoying an unlikely pennant run. Talented journeymen working together. No stars, no egos, mutually supportive, and above all, ruthlessly and relentlessly effective. Reacher said, "That was all a long time ago." "We have to do something," Nagley said. "All of us, collectively. You do not mess with the special investigators. Remember that?" That was just a slogan. No, it was true. We depended on it.
For morale, that was all. It was just bravado. It was whistling in the dark.
It was more than that. We had one another's backs.
Then?
And now. And always. It's a karma thing. Someone killed Franz, and we can't just let it go. How would you feel if it was you and the rest of us didn't react?
If it was me, I wouldn't feel anything. I'd be dead.
You know what I mean. Reacher closed his eyes again, and the picture came back. Calvin Franz, tumbling and cartwheeling through the darkness, maybe screaming, or maybe not, his old friend.
"I can handle it. Or you and I together, but we can't go back to how it was. That never works."
"We have to go back." Reacher opened his eyes.
"Why?"
"Because the others are entitled to participate. They earned that right over 2 hard years. We can't just take it away from them unilaterally. They would resent that. It would be wrong."
"And?"
"We need them, Reacher. Because Franz was good. Very good. As good as me. As good as you. And yet, someone broke his legs and threw him out of a helicopter. I think we're going to need all the help we can get with this. So we need to find the others." Reacher looked at her, heard her office guy's voice in his head. "There's a list of names. You're the first to get back to her," he said.
"The others should have been a lot easier to find than me."
Nagley nodded. "I can't raise any of them."
Chapter 8. A list of names. 9 names. 9 people. Reacher knew where 3 of them were, specifically or generically. Himself and Nagley, specifically, in a Denny's on West Sunset in Hollywood, and Franz, generically, in a morgue somewhere else.
"What do you know about the other 6?
5,
Nagley said.
"Stan Lowry is dead."
"When?"
"Years ago. Car wreck in Montana. The other guy was drunk."
"I didn't know that."
"Shit happens."
"That's for damn sure. I liked Stan."
"Me too."
"So where are the others?"
"Tony Swan is assistant director of corporate security for a defense manufacturer here in Southern California somewhere."
"Which one?"
"I'm not sure. A startup. Something new. He's only been there about a year."
Reacher nodded. He had liked Tony Swan, too. A short, wide man, almost cubic in shape, affable, good-humored, intelligent.
Nagley said,
"Orozco and Sanchez are out in Vegas. They run a security business together, casinos and hotels, on contract." Reacher nodded again. He had heard that Jorge Sanchez had left the army around the same time he had. A little frustrated and embittered. He had heard that Manuel Orozco had been planning to stay in, but overall it wasn't a huge surprise to find that he had changed his mind. Both men were mavericks, lean, fast, leathery, impatient with bullshit. Nagley said,
"Dave O'Donnell is in D.C., plain vanilla private detective. Plenty of work for him there."
"I guess there would be," Reacher said.
O'Donnell had been the meticulous one. He had done the whole unit's paperwork, pretty much single-handed. He had looked like an Ivy League gentleman,
but he had always carried a switchblade in one pocket and brass knuckles in the other. A useful guy to have around. Nagley said,
Carla Dixon is in New York, forensic accounting. She understands money, apparently.
She always understood numbers, Reacher said. I remember that.
Reacher and Dixon had spent the occasional hour trying to prove or disprove various famous mathematical theorems. A hopeless task, given that they were both rank amateurs, but it had passed some time. Dixon was dark and very pretty and comparatively small. A happy woman who thought the worst of people, but inevitably she had been proved right, 9 times out of 10.
Reacher asked, How do you know so much about them?
I keep track. I'm interested.
Why can't you raise them?
I don't know. I put calls out, but nobody's answering.
So is this an attack on all of us? Collectively?
Can't be, Nagley said. I'm at least as visible as Dixon or O'Donnell, and nobody has come after me.
Yet.
Maybe.
You called the others the same day you put the money in my bank? Nagley nodded. It's only been 3 days. Maybe they're all busy.
So what do you want to do? Wait for them?
I want to forget all about them. You and I can stand up for Franz, just the two of us.
It would be better to have the old unit back together. We were a good team. You were the best leader the Army ever had.
Reacher said nothing.
What? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that if I wanted to rewrite history, I'd start a lot further back than that.
Nagley folded her hands together and rested them on the black binder. Slim fingers, brown skin, painted nails, tendons and sinew.
One question, she said. Suppose I had gotten a hold of the others. Suppose I hadn't bothered to try that thing with your bank. Suppose you found out years from now that Franz had been murdered and the six of us had just gone ahead and fixed it without you. How would you feel then?
Reacher shrugged, paused a beat.
Bad, I guess. Cheated, maybe. Left out.
Nagley said nothing.
Okay, we'll try to find the others, but we won't wait forever.
Nagley had a rental car in the lot. She paid the diner check and led Reacher outside. The car was a red Mustang convertible. They climbed in together, and Nagley hit a button and dropped the top. She took a pair of sunglasses from the dash and put them on, backed out of her slot and turned south off Sunset at the next light, headed for Beverly Hills. Reacher sat quietly beside her and squinted in the afternoon sun. Inside a tan Ford Crown Victoria, 30 yards west of the restaurant, a man called Thomas Brandt watched them go. He used his cell phone and called his boss, a man named Curtis Mawney. Mawney didn't answer, so Brandt left the voicemail. He said,
She just picked up the first one of them.
Parked 5 cars behind Brandt's Crown Victoria was a dark blue Chrysler sedan containing a man in a dark blue suit. He, too, watched the red Mustang disappear into the haze, and he, too, used a cell phone. He said,
She just picked up the first one of them. I don't know which one it is. Big guy. Looks like a bum.
Then he listened to his boss's reply and pictured him smoothing his necktie over the front of his shirt, one-handed, while he held the phone with the other. Chapter 9. Like its name suggested, the Beverly Wilshire Hotel was on Wilshire Boulevard, in the heart of Beverly Hills, directly opposite the mouth of Rodeo Drive. It was made up of 2 large limestone buildings, one behind the other, one old and ornate, the other new and plain. They were separated by a valet lane that ran parallel to the boulevard. Nagley nosed the Mustang into it and stopped close to a knot of black town cars, and Reacher said,
I can't afford to stay here.
I already booked your room.
Booked it or paid for it?
It's on my card.
I won't be able to pay you back.
Get over it.
This place has got to be hundreds a night.
I'll let it slide for now. Maybe we'll take some spoils of war down the track.
if the bad guys are rich.
They are. They have to be. How else would they afford their own helicopter?
She left the key in and the motor running and opened the heavy red door and slid out. Reacher did the same thing on his side. A guy ran up and gave Nagley a valet stub. She took it and tracked around the hood of the car and took the steps up to the back of the hotel's main lobby. Reacher followed, watched her move. She floated, like she was weightless. She ghosted through a crowded dog-leg corridor and came out in a reception area the size and shape of a baronial hall. There was a check-in desk, a bell desk, a concierge desk, all separate. There were pale velvet armchairs with beautifully dressed guests in them. Reacher said, I look like a bum in here.
Or like a billionaire. Nowadays you can't tell.
She led him to the counter and checked him in. She had reserved his room under the name Thomas Shannon, who had been Stevie Ray Vaughan's giant bass player back in the day and one of Reacher's favorites. He smiled. He liked to avoid paper trails, whenever possible. He always had. Pure reflex. He turned to Nagley and nodded his thanks and asked, What are you calling yourself here?
My real name. I don't do that stuff anymore. Too complicated now.
The clerk handed over a key card and Reacher put it in his shirt pocket. He turned away from the desk and faced the room. Stone, dim chandeliers, thick carpet, flowers in huge glass vases, perfumed air. Let's make a start. They started in Nagley's room, which was actually a two-room suite. The living room portion was tall and square and stately and had been done up in blues and golds. It could have been a room in Buckingham Palace. There was a desk in the window with two laptop computers on it. Next to the laptops was an empty cell phone cradle, and next to that was an open, spiral-bound notebook, new, letter size, the kind of thing a high school student might buy in September. Last in line was a thin stack of printed papers. Forms. Five of them. Five names, five addresses, five telephone numbers. The old unit, less two dead and two already present. Reacher said, Tell me about Stan Lowry.
Not much to tell. He quit the army, moved to Montana, got hit by a truck.
Life's a bitch and then you die.
Tell me about it.
What was he doing in Montana?
Raising sheep, churning butter.
Alone?
There was a girlfriend.
She's still there?
Probably. They had a lot of acres.
Why sheep? Why butter?
No coal for private eyes in Montana. And Montana was where the girlfriend was.
Reacher nodded. At first glance, Stan Lowry had not been an obvious candidate for a rural fantasy. He had been a big-boned black guy from some scruffy factory town in western Pennsylvania, smart as a whip and hard as a railroad tie. Dark alleys and pool halls had seemed to be his natural habitat. But somewhere in his DNA, there had been a clear link with the earth. Reacher wasn't surprised he had become a farmer. He could picture him in a raggedy old barn coat, knee-high in prairie grass under a huge blue sky, cold but happy. Why can't we raise the others?
I don't know,
Nagley said.
What was Franz working on?
Nobody seems to have that information.
Didn't the new wife say anything?
She isn't new. They were married 5 years.
She's new to me.
I couldn't interrogate her exactly. She was on the phone telling me her husband was dead. And maybe she doesn't know anyway.
We're going to have to go ask her. She's the obvious starting point here.
After we try the others again, Nagley said.
Reacher picked up the five sheets of printed paper and gave three to Nagley and kept two for himself. She used her cell phone and he used a room phone on a credenza. They started dialing. His numbers were for Dixon and O'Donnell. Carla and Dave, the East Coast residents, New York and D.C. Neither one of them answered. He got their business office machines instead and heard their long-forgotten voices. He left the same message for both of them. This is Jack Reacher with a 10:30 from Francis Nagley at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Los Angeles, California. Get off your ass and call her back. Then he hung up and turned to where Nagley was pacing and leaving the same kind of message for Tony Swan. Don't you have home numbers for them?
They're all unlisted, which is only to be expected. Mine is too. My guy in Chicago is working on it, but it's not easy these days. Phone company computers have gotten a lot more secure.
They must be carrying cell phones. Doesn't everyone now?
I don't have those numbers either.
But wherever they are, they can call in and check their office voicemail remotely, can't they?
Easily.
So why haven't they? In 3 whole days,